This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is On the Media. I'm Leah Fetter, reporting on the struggle over how Poland tells its history and shapes its future. Before the anti-liberal right, there was liberal democracy, which officially took hold in Poland in the summer of 1989.
Poland appeared today on the verge of having a non-communist government. President Wojciech Jaruzelski met with Solidarity leader Lech Walesa.
A few years later, after the Soviet bloc collapsed, political scientist Francis Fukuyama wrote a famous book called The End of History and the Last Man.
The end of history refers to the what I think still remains a question of whether that process is one that, you know, finally culminates in a certain kind of civilization.
Fukuyama on C-SPAN in 2001.
You know, the last civilization that mankind will achieve, because in a certain sense it's the, you know, it's the right one, it's the one that fits human nature. What I argue in the book is that liberal democracy comes much closer to fitting human nature in that sense than virtually any type of prior form of government or political organization or social organization.
It was a seductive idea that liberal democracy, which embraced human rights and equal protection along with popular representation, was humanity's natural landing point. But it's been severely challenged by the rise of illiberalism, a mindset that sees democracy as possible without those rights and protections. In this view, democracy is a winner-take-all game in which minority rights are subordinate to the will of the majority. It restyles the, quote, will of the people into something fierce, absolutist. And it's a rising trend. Fareed Zakaria.
These two traditions, liberty and law on the one hand and popular participation on the other, became intertwined, creating what we call liberal democracy. In a number of countries, from Hungary to Russia to Turkey to Iraq to the Philippines, the two strands have come apart. Democracy persists in many cases, but liberty is under siege.
In Poland, the past 5 years, the illiberal Law and Justice Party has quelled its judicial opponents and expanded its control over the courts. It's enacted harsh measures against immigrants and the LGBT community. 4 years ago, it tried for a complete ban on abortion, but backed down after a wave of strikes. It's turned the state TV network into a party mouthpiece and is increasingly enmeshed with the Catholic Church. It's also done something else.
They have used economics.
Journalist and historian Anne Applebaum.
Poland went from having one of the smaller welfare states in Europe to having it's either the largest or one of the top two or three as a proportion of GDP. They basically created a welfare state. And for people in the provinces, it was so generous that about 1 million people left the labor market altogether. It was a big economic giveaway.
The kind of giveaway usually associated with social democrats. Political analysts credit the success of the Law and Justice Party to a secret sauce of xenophobia, nationalism, and those economic policies. The battle for the future of Poland was raging last summer when I visited Warsaw. That day, my guide was Igor Stofiszewski, a slight man in his 40s with a shaved head. He's a literary critic and activist with the left-wing publication and network Krytyka Polityczna. We walked downtown past some buildings claimed by squatters, a mix of locals and immigrants. We pass a poster with the face of an older woman named Jolanta Breska, an activist murdered in 2012 and now a symbol of the housing movement in Warsaw. Igor says the city's plastered with them. Warsaw is replete with symbols of resistance. A theater with the words "Feminism, not fascism" spray-painted across its marquee. A mayor openly opposed to the Law and Justice government.
He signed so-called LGBT charter, which proposes very concrete solutions for LGBT community to feel safe.
So if they're openly antagonistic to the national government, How does the national government respond to Warsaw?
Wow, they are trying to respond now. We have to turn right.
Okay.
So
here the traffic got loud, but he told me that during the last round of municipal elections held in October 2018, the opposition trounced Law and Justice. Turnout was up almost 20%. And though the ruling party made gains in rural areas, it won just four of the 107 mayoral races.
They completely lost local elections in October 2018.
It's a curious thing, this divide. On one hand, nationalism has a foothold, as evident at November's annual Independence March, where tens of thousands of Poles filled the streets and organizers chanted, "Glory to Great Poland and God, honor and homeland," from the stage. So does homophobia, as when thousands of anti-gay protesters attacked last summer's LGBT Pride March in Bialystok. On the other hand, when we first aired the show last fall, recent parliamentary elections had failed to deliver Law and Justice a consolidated victory. Yes, the party retained national control, but it failed to achieve a constitutional majority and lost the upper house of parliament. Here's how Yaroslav Kwis, editor-in-chief of the centrist media think tank Kultura Liberalna and co-author of the new book, The End of the Liberal Mind, Poland's New Politics, explained it.
We have quite a new political narrative now that seems to be more pluralistic than for the last 4 years when we had only the opposition that was mainly from the camp of the previous government, more or less center-right, and the conservative nationalist right from the Law and Justice. So now it is more colorful.
New parties, new potential. A continual battle for the future while wrestling over the past. Because the persistent narrative of exceptionalism and cultural encroachment shaped by Law and Justice calls for an ongoing response.
Maybe we should talk about the last 30 years as the process of ups and the downs, because it would be less mythical.
Yaroslav Kwis is describing history not as the unvarnished glory of liberal democracy, but as an ongoing effort to gain and retain freedom.
We have the first generations of Poles that were born and brought up in their own independent state. Something like this did not happen since 18th century. If something is to be celebrated, it is that, I think. Now, you have a lot of young citizens that do not remember communism.
I know that the communist past has been manipulated in a lot of different ways, and particularly the anti-communist sentiment. I'm wondering if you think there's value in actually reclaiming some of that communist past.
I tend to think, after all those experiments with political history, that we should remember more. That it was a political mistake of liberals to leave the historical issues to the right. What could be the solution is to rather to teach how complex Polish history in the 20th century was and how it ended up eventually with this wonderful event of entering the European Union. And we should start to teach it to the new generations as a history that is very complex one. And then maybe we could have some conclusions for the future.
I mean, I would not say that we're definitely heading for authoritarianism.
Anne Applebaum.
Nor would I say that liberal democracy has won and we'll definitely beat this thing off and it'll be fine. I mean, this I think is now what politics is. The assumption that we had finished with those arguments and that we'd all learned the lessons of the Second World War or whatever piece of history you want to point to was wrong.
So now we enter the stage in which we have a kind of permanent battle and skirmishes one after another. It's not going to be the war that would be over here or there. It's like, okay, so these elections were won by illiberals, but we should hope and work for the future, and we should win next elections.
Last month, new elections were held. This time, elections for the country's presidency.
In Poland, conservative President Andrzej Duda has narrowly won a second term after he defeated Warsaw's liberal mayor in Sunday's vote.
This is the tightest race we've seen in a Polish presidential election since 1989. Also the highest turnout because both candidates did present a very distinct vision for the future of Poland.
The Law and Justice president is empowered to approve and implement policy from the Law and Justice-controlled parliament, furthering its ability to attack independent institutions and consolidate control over the media. I asked Quis if the results had changed his perspective.
Obviously, the Law and Justice ruling party won. This is the main point. There will be the continuation of politics of the illiberal turn, no doubt about it.
But he says that's not the whole story. The opposition party Civic Platform had nominated an exceptionally weak candidate who polled dismally. But then fate in the form of COVID-19 intervened. The elections were postponed by 7 weeks, and that candidate was replaced with that very popular Warsaw mayor, Rafał Trzaskowski. In just 4 weeks, he garnered millions of additional votes.
Rafał Trzaskowski had 3-4 weeks only, and he was able to gather 10 million votes. The opposition gained a true leader that launched his career not only as a mayor of Warsaw as before, but now as Poland's new opposition leader.
Trzaskowski, having lost the election by a razor-thin margin, now is trying to turn the millions who voted for him into a movement of NGOs, local government, think tanks, and individuals to defend civil society.
The new Solidarity Movement, that's the name that Rafał Trzaskowski gave to his project, will be announced at the end of August or at the beginning of September. The date is symbolic to refer to the old Solidarity Movement.
The old Solidarity was a self-governing trade union that became a social movement, credited with toppling communism in Poland. Trzaskowski hopes to tap into its legacy of unity and change. For Quis, the latest election is a setback, not a defeat. No, he says, this wasn't a fair campaign. Law and Justice clearly tipped the scales of state media. But it was a legitimate one. Votes were counted. So that just means the fight continues.
What would happen in 3 years? My goodness, who knows? We have a lot of fears for the future, but at the same time, what could we do? We should start to work from below, and we should really rethink the frames of our political world. We should take seriously Law and Justice success and their support, and start to work again and again.
It was foolish to think a generation ago that we were at the end of history. And it would be equally foolish to think that the story is done now. In Poland, as in the United States, history is being wielded in service of opposing visions of the future. And the question of who will inherit that future? That comes down to who's willing to fight for it and what stories they tell. For On the Media, I'm Leah Fetter.
This week's show was reported and produced by Leah Fetter. On the Media is also produced by Alana Casanova-Burgess, Micah Loewinger, John Hanrahan, Zandra Ellen, and Eloise Blondio. We had more help from Eleanor Nash, and our show was edited by me. Our technical director is Jennifer Munson. Our engineer this week was Sam Baer. Special thanks to WNYC archivist Andy Lancet, as well as Wojciech Oleszak and Victor Dynarski. Katya Rogers is our executive producer. On the Media is a production of WNYC Studios. I'm Brooke Gladstone.